back to the exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a film called Camp Death 3. There is no Camp Death 1 and 2, but the creator, Matt Frame, director, and his buddy, Uncle Mel, who plays a character played by Darren Anderchuk, is here to discuss the film. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Why is there no Death Camp 1 and 2, Camp Death 1 and 2?
I thought it would be funny and a sort of an original idea that just skipped it 3, but I didn't realize there's a Dude Bro Massacre 3. Have you heard of this movie?
No.
It's kind of a comedy horror thing. They've done that before us, so I didn't steal the idea, but definitely it was a jokey title.
But I think it works for your film, because right off the top, you have almost like previously on.
Yeah.
And I thought it worked.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that work about it, and a lot of things that don't work about it. More things work than don't.
I would argue with you. I think everything works for what you're going for in your film. Everything works for it.
We're sending you that check right now.
No check needed. Let's start with the meat. I really think your film is fun, even though you send me an email saying you might hate this.
Right.
I don't think there's anything to hate. Now, tell me why you send emails for why people would hate this.
Well, first of all, it was because I wanted to get their attention, right? I wanted them to look at the email, the subject line saying, I suspect you may hate my film, and have them go, whoa, what's this guy talking about? But also because there is. I mean, it wasn't made with the intention to have people hate it, but there is about a 35% chance that people who do watch it are going to walk away infuriated or really offended. And we're kind of embracing that now, actually. It's some of the best reviews we've got, or at least for me, the more entertaining ones, are those that just hate on the movie for a lot of reasons, but they do it in a sort of passionate way.
Didn't somebody say he wanted to punch you in the face?
One guy wanted to punch me in the face. One guy said that I created one of the most epic pieces of celluloid crud in the history of movie making. So, yeah, it's all good. You know, every last bit of feedback we get is positive.
And it's extremely un-PC, and we're in a very sensitive society right now. So to make jokes that we're making and to try to offend as many people as we can, it doesn't sit well with a lot of people sometimes. So there's a niche market for this, 100%.
And we're Canadian, too, so we have to be careful about, because Canadians have a very good reputation for not being offensive, so we have to go out of our way to sort of apologize in advance for any offense we may cause.
Yeah, sorry, did we say we're Canadian?
We're
Canadian. I just want to make sure that everybody knows that. Sorry.
Should I tell you guys ahead of time, I'm Canadian, too, so we're all good?
Really? Where are you from?
Okay, excellent.
Where are you from?
I'm from Toronto.
Nice.
So where's your location of your camp? Because it really does look like a summer camp.
That's on, it's called Camp Miriam, and it's on a place called Gabriel Island, which is pretty close to Nanaimo. So you take a ferry from Vancouver to Nanaimo, and then it's a short hop over to Gabriola from there.
I want to give a shout-out before we go any further to the camp name, Camp Crystal Meth. Fabulous.
Yeah, that's actually, credit goes to Sean Bordoff for that. Sean plays Crapsy, the weed-whacking groundskeeper. It was his idea, actually. I changed it from meth to meth with a PH, but, yeah, that's his idea, so I can't get credit for that.
Well, I got to give you a full thing. My next person is, my favorite person in the film is the whack-weed guy, I called him, Crappy.
We all love him, man.
I wrote it down here. A person goes, whack-weed all day, needs his own feature film. That guy had me. I was upset when he disappeared a little early in the film for my liking.
Yeah, I mean, there was a whole bunch of stuff we shot with him that never made the film. He's got this whole subplot of him having sex with a bunch of different appliances, clock radios and blenders and stuff like that. So we had a bunch of scenes like that where Uncle Mel was discovering the appliance after it being used by Crapsy.
The air conditioner. I think he had used the air conditioner.
Yeah, but it didn't make the final cut. So, yeah, there's stuff out there which probably will come out. I'm going to have a couple more different versions of the film. We have an 80-minute version, which is the main one, and then we have a 100-minute version, and then we have a 125-minute version, which will have everything in there. So,
awesome. So, Darren, how did you take on the persona of Uncle Mel? He's a little out there.
He's bizarre. I have that intensity inside of me. I just do. It's part of who I am. I know this guy very well. I shower with this guy. I think I just... when I first started doing it, it wasn't blustery enough. And I think with the first take, Matt said to me, bigger, make it larger. And I made it larger, and then it was there. I was standing outside the cabin at that point. It was the first shot. It was where he sits his, Dave sits his tea. And then at one point I started, and he goes, just, it needs to be bigger. And I was like, okay. So I did it, put a little more gravel into the voice, and that was him. And then I realized that this guy is just, he's aggressive. He doesn't care who he hurts. He's mean-spirited. He's egotistical. I know this guy. So, not all those things, but you know, I think everybody has it inside of them. And I think it's one of those things that we try to cap, and because, we need to stem sort of who we are at this point, in society as it is, having somebody that's that blustery and so egotistical is refreshing to me. I love these guys, man. The guys, when they get portrayed like these guys that are over the top, I love them. You know, guys that you don't know where they're coming from, but you have a pretty good sense. Yeah.
Matt, I think you found each and every character had something to do, I would say, in your film. Your camp counselor has something to do. Yeah. The wheelchair guy has something to do. The braces chick even has something to do.
Right.
And I think...
That's a credit to them. What we did was we workshopped the film for about 3 months. Even before we had a finalized script, we would get together every Sunday, a group of us, and do like 4 or 5 hours of improv and just working on the characters. And so I gave them a rough outline as to what it was that I wanted originally, but they're the ones who brought it to life. So even though there's some minor characters there, those actors have put a lot of work into bringing them to life and giving them a unique identity, even though they're not on screen that long. So yeah, it's all the actors really. That's why they all got story credits, because you know they brought stuff to the table that I never would have imagined bringing myself. So yeah, that's all them.
So let's go through the characters. I think that's an important part of your film. Like Uncle Mel's a character, his wife's a character, Crappy's a character, Braces Girl's a character, and your two main leads, I guess I would say, the girl and the boy, have to be perfect for their roles. Did you have to search for them, or did they fall in your lap?
Well, the actress Angela Galanopoulos, she's a local improviser. And I saw her about a year before I cast Camp Death. I saw her on stage performing at a show, an improv show, and she just stood out to me. She was just brilliant. And so I thought, I really want to work with her. So I invited her to come down, and so she was kind of a lock for the lead female role. And then Dave was a bit of a fluke, because Dave actually, he auditioned the first round, and then he didn't get through the first round. I didn't call him back. I don't know why. So he got a hold of me and said, look, can you give me any advice as to what I can do better next time? I thought, oh, I should look at his, we filmed it. I thought, okay, well, I'll look at his footage and see what he can do better. And I thought, what am I talking? This guy's actually pretty good. Let's bring him back. So then he came back for another one. He made the cut. And then he just came out of nowhere, and he was perfect for that role, because Dave is like that. Dave is a very, he's a very positive dude. And also he's also within that lane of not wanting to offend people and just trying to be polite. So he was the perfect fit. And then together, I mean, they did a lot of work on their own. They have really great chemistry together. So I got really lucky with the performances and the people who I brought in. They all seem to really really grab a hold of their characters, and I think they all, at least initially, really believed in what we're doing. So.
You bring so many ideas to this film. Fast forward. You draw from everything.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't even tell people, well, yeah, it's a horror comedy, but it draws from everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you have Jason's reference 3 times that I wrote down. Probably more.
Right.
I think you have Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, Uncle Mel's from Sleepaway Camp.
Yes. I would definitely say you are, because I just watched that this summer, all 3 of them. 4 of them.
Okay,
never mind. you're number one. You get burnt on by a cooking thing. The thing pushes over on you.
Well, that's the cook, actually. Uncle Mel's the owner of the camp.
Oh, is he the owner? Okay. He's in
one. Yeah, he's the one who's always trying to cover up the crimes. But I mean, Darren plays him more like the Kyle Cook thing.
Oh, 100%. More like yes. So I want to go start right on the Star Wars reference. I'll try to be nice. Where did that idea come from? Because that was awesome.
About halfway through production, I realized that the content of the film was pretty offensive, and I figured that the best way to be able to have people realize that the film should not be taken seriously is to step it up. And so I added the Star Wars Return of the Jedi speeder chase, added the musical number in there, added the ending with Raph going into space, all the stuff that makes it go, you know, the floating head with the propeller, you know, head, all that stuff was added after the fact, just because I wanted to be able to take it into the realm of the absurd so that nobody could take it seriously, so that nobody would, or at least we would minimize the effects of people being offended by the content and the use of the word retard, for example, things like that.
What?
So,
what?
Yeah, we use it all the time. So, yeah. So, yeah, that's what it was. It came from there. And also, I was, at that point in the production, I was pretty bummed out, generally. And I wanted to do stuff that was just fun. I thought, you know, this, why not? Let's just do a Return of the Jedi speeder chase. That'll be fun. And that's how we got in there. Yeah.
Now,
when he was filming it, he was on bikes, and I showed up to set, and he had these bikes there, and I was like, what are these? And he's like, well, we're doing a speeder chase. I was like, okay. So, but it turned out amazing.
You know how that started? Because there was the speeder chase bike is actually an exercise bike. I was walking to my car. I have an underground parking lot where I park my car, and there was this exercise bike by the dumpsters there. I thought, that kind of looks like the Return of the Jedi, and then boom, it came into my head. Ah! So that's how that happened.
So let's go back to Uncle Mal, because we don't want to leave him alone.
No.
How much do you hate your wife?
My wife is a mail-order bride, and we actually workshopped that quite a bit, and there's an actual whole backstory to that, which will show up in Camp Death 2 and 3, the 1.
What was the backstory? I forget. The
backstory is that I ordered her, and she showed up, and we hate each other. We despise each other, but we're there specifically because she has, immigrant status, and so I need to okay the fact that she's there. Right, so we have to live together in order for them to okay the fact that she stays and she provides money and all that kind of stuff. So we're together out of necessity as opposed to a love.
But what was your angle? Why did you have to stay in the marriage? She had the money, or was it her money that you were?
Oh my God, that's going back.
I think she's the one with the money, and you're the one with the passport. Right?
With the passport and et cetera. And it was a mail order bride, and I couldn't find anybody else that actually wanted to be around me. So she was the only one that would put up with me to small amounts of things. So I kind of ordered her, and once she was there, there's nothing I could do. Can't get rid of her. So short of squishing her head. Oh,
well, she did sell your car.
Sorry, what was that?
She did sell your car.
Yeah, she did.
That was a great scene. That made me laugh so hard.
Yeah, so that, see, the van thing, the whole van thing wouldn't happen if she didn't sell my car. So it's a good thing she was there.
Yeah.
Right?
So I guess I got to ask some questions. Since you've expressed, why are people offended by this film? It's a comedy. I think it's clearly stated that from the beginning.
I think a lot of it has to do with Uncle Mal. I think people... I think that because everybody brings their own baggage, right, to a movie, and if something sets them off or they see something that triggers whatever that is, it's going to make them upset. And Uncle Mal is right there at the very beginning. I think that some people have a real tough time with that aggressive, male, foul language, you know, insensitive type of persona. And right now, especially, we're just, you know, that kind of thing is
taboo.
It's absolutely taboo. So I think that's part of it. I think too the fact that the camp is for mentally ill people, that could offend some people because I think it's an insensitive portrayal of the mentally ill. Most people who say that don't realize that I have a mental illness myself, and so it gives me a get out of jail free card for making the movie.
And I say that I have a mental illness, so that's, you know, that gets me out of jail as well.
you know,
I just, you know, the brain, nobody's brain works the same, and I think that mental illness is one of those things that if you have a working brain, you're a very lucky person because not everybody's brain works like it should. So I think the standouts are the ones whose brains work sufficiently well to get you through life. I know people that struggle with life every day, and those are the people that we're trying to reach out to and say, it's okay, man. Everybody's like this. You know what I mean? Everybody has their thing. Everybody has a little glitch, right? So, you know, let's accept people for who they are, right? And if you call them out and you sort of make fun of a whole genre and you make sure fun of everybody, then nobody's singled out and everybody just becomes a community, right? Uncle Mel has a mental illness. He's mentally unstable individual, right? How he gets through life, I don't know. I have no idea, right? And so, yeah, I think the stronger you are, sometimes, I don't know. Yeah, it's mental illness or it's just mental instability, and there's a lot of it out there. So, yeah, we just try to call it out. That's all.
A lot of the characters are in the film are based on people that I've actually met along the way.
Oh, yeah.
in my various journeys to the psychiatric unit. So there, I mean, obviously these ones are amped up to 11, but there are a lot of these folks. There was a girl in the last visit that I had, who had the neck brace on, who was just like Berta. So it's sort of based in reality. But to answer your question about why people are offended, I think just the content, the attitude of it, the pace of it, it's rapid fire and it's in your face. It's unapologetically offensive. So I think that there's some people who just aren't, it's not a good fit for them. That's okay.
So I guess we're going to have to ask you, since you've touched on mental illness and you've touched on social climate, why would you write this film this way?
Because people with mental illness have the darkest sense of humor I've ever met in my life. The one thing that's constant in all of the times I've been to the hospital is being people have just the ability to laugh at themselves because there's no other option. You realize that the situation is absurd and there's not much else you can do but to poke fun at the situation. So for me, it's a way to be able to poke fun at myself and to be able to just laugh at it. And also I would find, you know, I think if people are offended by the mental illness angle, it's not going to be people who have mental illnesses. It'll be people who think that they know what that's about. But, you know, whenever I see a movie that has a portrayal of a mentally ill person and it's kind of a stereotype or kind of goofy, I think it's great. That's the one thing people don't really realize is that people who are in that situation have an amazing ability to laugh at themselves and to be able to recognize the absurdity of the situation that they find themselves in at times. So, yeah. But also, I wanted to make a fun movie. I wanted to make a funny movie, and I just happened to fit in there. So.
Okay, let's go to some more.
Comedy.
Sorry?
Yeah, comedy sometimes works best when you make fun of other people's problems or issues. That's just how comedy works, right? So maybe that's why this one works as well as it does. And we're working with some of the most talented. Their timing is amazing. All the people that are on this film, their timing is amazing. So very, very talented people. Just one of the best casts I think I've ever worked with, for sure.
So I have a question for you, Darren. I've been told in the past that pizza is not lunch. So what kind of catering did you have on the film?
Catering. Catering. It was actually quite good. We had a chef. She came in. She cooked for everybody. Out of the goodness of her heart, she was amazing. There was a breakfast. There was lunch. There was a dinner. It was very well organized, actually.
What are you talking? She quit.
Well, at the end. Yeah, towards the end. There was a couple days before the end.
She hated me. She quit. So I never.
Yeah. We had two different experiences.
She tried to make it sound better than. I mean, I never actually had any of her food, actually. So I can't take that away. But yeah, she quit about the fifth day in. She, her and her husband and her daughter was part of the film itself, and so they all got upset and quit.
Hold on.
So we had to make our own food after that.
And I think what happened is that they took some of the funds that Matt had raised and went to the store. And when they came back, the bill was astronomical, and we had very little. And we're like, well it's on an island. And groceries aren't necessarily okay with that, right? So,
is there a problem with the bill?
Somebody was telling me that they spent a tremendous amount at the store buying pop and chips and all that kind of stuff because it was it, the prices were a little bit higher.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Right? So they went into a corner store and kind of grabbed whatever they could and came back, and there was nothing sort of substance, but there was lots of junk food kind of thing, and yeah, but it was, there was enough food. I had enough food to eat.
I think the cast and crew, they were fed well, and they enjoyed it. But the cook did quit, though.
And then we had other people fill in, right? So it was it was community-based, so other people filled in and took that up when that happened.
I think actually the two leads, it was Dave and Angela, they would go and shoot their scenes, and they would come in, and they would cook dinner for everybody, and they go back out and shoot no more scenes.
Yeah, I think Angela was one of the cooks.
Yeah, that was one good thing about, there being this mass exodus of people, was that we kind of needed to band together even more to make the thing work, so...
That was great. Yeah, I mean, I had a great time. Matt didn't. I had a great time.
No. Who did the cook's kid play?
She's not actually in the film. She was brought on actually because we needed to have some nudity. That was, that's a big thing with 80s films. So I approached this girl who was comfortable with that, and she got really into it. She ended up taking on a sort of a bigger role in regards to the production. So she brought in her mother and her father and her childhood friend to work the kitchen and do some other stuff. So then when she left, she quit the film, we were kind of left without continuity and without food. Well, we had food. We just didn't have anybody to cook it. We filmed a little bit with her, but most of the stuff that she was filmed in, stuff didn't make the cut. Or if it did, there's a couple of wider shots of only Camper standing there. She was dead center, so I had to kind of use CGI to get her out of the shot. So, she's not in the film at all.
Oh, okay. Take that. How did you raise the funds for your film?
Oh, no. Okay. We had a crowdfunding campaign trying to raise $16,000. That would cover the cost of the rental of the camp and getting the cast over there and the food and everything else. And I think about 5 or 6 days before it ended, we had only raised $1,000. So I thought, well, look, I need to do something to be able to inject some interest in this thing. So I came up with this stupid idea to walk around a track near my house, like a regular track, for 24 hours straight with a coconut chained to my waist. The reaction there. That's exactly what I was looking for. It's one of those.
We all went through that.
Yeah. The whole idea was that it was so stupid and so weird that it would get people's attention, which it kind of did. And so I did it. I blew out my left knee pretty badly, but I accomplished it. I did 122 kilometers, I think, straight. The problem was that the coconut was kind of swinging on one side, so it was throwing my gait out of whack, and so my left knee was just completely done in. But it brought in attention. We were on the third page of the local paper, and people just got it behind it. So we raised the whole amount within 4 days. We got the full $16,000. So then we had some investors. Darren came on. We had 4 or 5 people who invested a bit of money as well. Was that part of it? That was part of the $16,000.
Yes, yeah.
That was part of it. And then the rest came from my credit cards and from my poor suffering family, who I've had to go to time and time again to bail me out. But, that's how we raised the money.
So what have you done with the film? Have you done the film festivals? Obviously, people have seen it.
Yeah. We've got 13 so far, and then we have a release date for VOD, SVOD, DVD, and Blu-ray for the 1st of February.
Are you going to make a part 2? Or a part 4? Or a part 1? I don't know where I should go.
We're making Camp Death 3 Part 2 in 3D. So there'll be a Part 2 of Camp Death 3, and we'll shoot it in 3D, like in true 3D.
So that's going to be a whole new film, I guess.
That's okay. The plan. I don't think we'll ever get there unless there's a demand for it. So that's why we're pushing as hard as we can to get as many people to watch it, because we want there to be word of mouth. Obviously, it'll help us to be able to raise the funds to make the sequel. But, yeah, I'd like to make, if possible, I'd like to be able to shoot that in the fall of 2020. I think it'll be the time to do it.
I don't think you'll have any problems making part 2. No doubt. The film is fantastic. Again, I want to read how much fun I had watching it.
Okay,
nice.
Here's the question for you, because I'm right in the stage where I'm needing to make the final cuts of the film. If you could tell me specifically what you thought worked really well. Actually, no, don't tell me that. Tell me the things that you thought didn't work. Because I'm trying to get an idea of, we were just talking about it beforehand, there's the final third, when, especially when there's that scene where Todd and the Santa suit is being chased around the campfire and that kind of stuff. Did that work for you? Like, what are the things that didn't work? So I'm trying to keep a mental
check. You're really putting on my spot right now.
Yeah.
I guess the third, if I'm really going to be specific about what I had problems in the third act. I liked the very end.
Yeah.
I like Uncle Mel's big scene.
Right. And he's not in there long enough, right?
And I like the Star Wars scene. Everything right. after that is, it could any part in there, feel free, is where I had some issues.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just bits of it there. I'd have to rewatch the final third and give you, okay, exactly right here or right there. If you wanted me to, I would be more than happy to do that for you.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think it's really important to be able to get that sort of feedback.
But I mean, I would have to actually sit down and take notes on that. So when I take notes for our interview, which we're still recording, I just take notes on the film, what I want to talk about.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I promise you, and everybody listening now, because I'll be on record, that I will watch it again and give you an answer tomorrow.
Sweet. I appreciate it. Yeah. Really sweet. Thanks,
so, man. Awesome. Okay, are you guys ready for some fun questions? Now you put me on the spot for a change.
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Okay, I've made questions for both of you, if that's okay.
Of course.
Okay, your favorite horror film?
My favorite horror film? Barring that one.
It can't be Camp Death 3.
I'm not much of a horror fan. Just be honest. I don't necessarily have one. Honestly, I'm not a horror fan. I've been in horror, several horror films that I really like, zombie films, etc. But I'm not really much of a horror fan per se. So I'm just going to take the fifth on that one.
Give me your favorite film then.
My favorite film?
Yeah.
I just saw one called Den of Thieves. With Gerard Butler. It's on Netflix. Just amazing to me. That's just a wonderful piece of work. Yeah.
Matt, I know you're a horror fan, so you're not going to get away with cutting the fat.
Yeah, my favorite is Halloween 3: Season of the Witch. That's my favorite.
That is such an underrated film and gets such flack, and it's so good.
I love it. Yeah, I saw it when I was 11, and I saw it at my neighbor's place. I had no knowledge at all of the previous two movies. I didn't know who Michael Myers was. I didn't care. So I took it for what it was. I didn't even realize that was an angle. That was a problem. And so I just thought that, I still do. I think the music is amazing. I think the atmosphere of the town, and it's very claustrophobic, and it's not really much of a, it's more of a science fiction horror type of thing. But yeah, I love it. I mean, there's problems with it for sure. But you know, I think that, especially when you're a kid, if you love something as a kid, it makes an impression on you, and it scared the hell out of me as a kid. It stuck with me. So yeah, that's my go-to. That's my favorite.
Okay, this one may be harder because I was going to go horror for this one. Mel, your favorite death scene on film?
Favorite death scene
on film?
It's got to be Scarface, man. Like, how do you get any better than that? They'll say hello to my little friend, right? Like, I don't know.
Did he mean the chainsaw in the bathtub? Or
No, the one he's standing on, he comes out, he does that huge whack of coke, and then he comes out with that Uzi and stands on the balcony and take me, you know what I mean? I don't know how to get much better than that, right? That's just the epitome of it, I think.
Matt, your favorite, same question?
Favorite death scene in a movie? Oh God, there's so many. Let's go back to Halloween 3 again. There is an unabashed child murder. It was incredible. Yeah, there's this. The whole. You ever seen the movie?
A long time ago, but I don't.
It's an insane story. But there's like these Irish witches who own a toy factory, and they're putting these chips, like these computer chips, inside of the masks. So when the kids have the masks on and they watch the commercial, it has this flashing pumpkin. Their heads melt, and spiders and snakes come out of their mouths. It's amazing. So, yeah, as a kid of 11 seeing that, the kid, you know, with the pumpkin head when he died, it scarred me. I thought that was actually realistic. I thought, my God, I have to be careful about what kind of masks I buy. So, yeah, that's my favorite, I guess.
The other one is from The Exorcist. Isn't there somebody that lands on a picket fence?
Yes, one of the priests gets thrown out of the window.
Yeah, that to me that still sticks in my head.
Okay, since you both acknowledge you're Canadian, your favorite Canadian food?
Canadian food? Oh, poutine. Oh man, we had that in Old Montreal. How do you go better than poutine?
Do we have Canadian food?
Oh yeah.
What's uniquely Canadian?
Back bacon.
Back bacon.
Yeah, we have
poutine.
I don't know, man. I'm on a really dumb new diet. I'm a vegetarian anyways, but I'm on this new keto diet. You heard about this?
Yes, I know.
No carbs or sugar, so I can hardly eat anything. So I don't even know if anything would qualify. Uniquely Canadian. I guess in Montreal they have those pickles. There's a certain deli that has pickles. I don't think for
Schwartz's.
I had one of those. Yep. Pretty good.
Kosher pickles. Yep, I know what you're talking about.
Kosher pickle, right?
Okay, well, tell everybody where they can find your film, where they can buy your film, and where they can contribute to Camp Def 3 Part 2.
Nice. Well, we have a Facebook page, which is just / Camp Def, I think. You can't miss it. It's Camp Def 3. We don't have a website just yet, but we'll have one very soon. And as of the 1st of February, we have a movie available on Amazon Prime for streaming. If you have an account, you can watch it for free. You can download it there. You can rent it. And also you can buy a Blu-ray or a DVD of just the 80-minute cut. And then probably sometime in the middle of April, we'll start releasing the other two cuts on Blu-ray, the 100-minute cut and then the 125-minute cut with everything in there. And also the craftsy stuff with him having sex with the clock radio, things like that. We'll have that in there so you'll be able to see what we did.
I don't know if you want to see it, but it's, you know, it's pretty gross.
Yeah, it's not, we don't actually see that. It's the aftermath.
Oh, you so want to see Crapsy.
It's just a soggy clock radio. Pretty disgusting.
Yeah, I think there's a sock, too.
Yeah, that was the whole thing, too, right? He had a sock.
He had a sock. Yeah, a full sock. It was stuck. Yeah.
Sean, the actor, he was insistent on having this sock thing, so he would sort of hide these socks full of ejaculate everywhere, so you have these things hanging in the background, and you know.
Our whole costume department spent hours on it. You'd come in, and they were decorating the clothing, Grassy's clothing. It was interesting.
Yeah,
it was kind of interesting to watch.
Thanks for your time. You guys were awesome.
Okay,
thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for watching it. I appreciate your
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.